My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Welcome back. New episode, new week. You've got Pixels and Polygons with me, Darren Hupke, and a new guest this week. We've got Sean Douglas from the Kirby Conversations podcast. He's also one of the folks helping to run the Soundstone Network, which this show is a part of. We've kind of collaborated together to help kind of work in stride and work together on the podcasts and things that we all do together. So it's Kirby Conversations, Flashback 64, and my show, Pixels and Polygons, working together to just have some fun and see what we can do all together and working as a group. And in connecting with Sean, we've sent the invite out and had him come on as a guest. And so we're answering the question this week, the evergreen question, the average game question. What is an average game or a below average game that you love that doesn't get enough attention? So it's a great way to get to know Sean and hear a little bit about his taste in games. And it's great to talk to somebody new as well. So the show continues to grow and gets new voices and everything each week. And it's really rad to do. So I hope you all have been enjoying it. If you have been, please consider leaving it a review, like and whatever, 5-star or whatever platform you're listening on, whatever rating scale they have. I would appreciate that. It goes a long way, and hearing some feedback on what y'all think is awesome. So if you do enjoy it, please consider doing that, and I would love to see and read those in the future. Other than that, business as usual, working away. The Beat 'em Up book goes to print here shortly. I got some 11th hour information, which was kind of cool. I literally was about to send it to print, and a person reached out to me who was involved with the series at one point and shared some information. And so it's going to cause me to kind of go back in and add some additional content to one of the chapters of the book. But that is something I'm going to knock out this week and still have it to print this week. But really odd timing to have that just kind of happen right there, right at the end. So super cool. And there's going to be some information in the book that I don't think from all my research, I've never read or come across at all on the internet, through interviews, through anything with one of these games. So cool. It's going to make the book even more special for me. But yeah, that's going to print soon. The next three retro game issues, the Kickstarter, wrapped earlier in the month, those are, or early June, that is, those are going to print as well, and those will ship out on time and be all good. Planning stages for the next couple of issues, while I'm still continuing to write the articles for, or the entries for, the next 32-bit library book. Lots of stuff going on, always grinding away, and yeah, I don't think I have anything new to announce at this moment, but there's some things going on once I do finish up that next 32-bit library book that I might want to revisit and consider. Otherwise, yeah, enjoy the episode after the ad break and hear the conversation with Sean. He'll introduce himself there. Check out the show notes below. Like I said, consider rating and reviewing it on the podcast platform of your choice. Check out the links for my Patreon and check out the links for pixelsandpolygons.net to see where you can buy all the stuff that I've got going on. Otherwise, enjoy your week, have some fun, and come back next week for another fun episode. Thanks. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and I don't need to introduce myself here, but I still do that. I have a brand new guest on the show this week, some more newness for 2025. It is a guest that's pretty impactful because we are now partners in the SoundZone Network team. But we've got, I'll let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, secret and special brand synergy guest.
Sure. So I'm Sean Douglas. I guess if people are following our network, I'm part of the SoundStone Network. I'm one of the founding members with Darren and our friend Gooey and friends Gooey and McKenna at Flashback 64. So I host the Kirby Conversations podcast that people may be familiar with if they're familiar with our network. But I think it's nice to be here, too, to talk about things other than just Kirby. I think that appearing on these other shows is a nice opportunity for people to see my other tastes. My background is really as a theater journalist, and so I spent the 2010s mostly doing theater commentary, interviewing a lot of playwrights, doing like Broadway and regional theater press, and then eventually there was a pandemic, and just being a theater journalist was not as viable a career anymore, so I started doing more with covering video games. It's kind of always felt like theater was like the interest I had that was my career, and the video games were more of like the hobby interest. And I feel like those have kind of flipped in a way. Like it almost feels like video games are a little bit more of a professional thing now to comment on, and theater is a little bit more of the hobby thing. But I still do both to some degree. I also teach, and that's kind of what I'm juggling right now: writing, podcasting, teaching, and sometimes talking about Kirby.
How long has Kirby Conversations been going on? Like, when was the first episode posted? What year was that?
It started about a year and a half ago.
Okay. So that's still a good chunk of time. I mean, yeah, it's I'm about that same time
thing.
Myself.
I would definitely not categorize my whole career has not been about covering Kirby or anything. That was just something I felt like was kind of a gap in a way. I just didn't see a lot of podcasting about Kirby, especially from people who are like my age, like in their 30s, like wanting to look at the history of HAL Laboratory in a more kind of historical and critical kind of sense, and just taking those games really kind of seriously as something to analyze. It just felt like something that the video game podcasting landscape could use. So got together with a few other people in the sort of Kirby commentary space, and we've been doing that for about a year and a half now.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, it isn't just Kirby, though. It's called Kirby Conversations. Like you said, it's the HAL Laboratories thing. So it's Sakurai and like, you know, the legacy that is all of that. But, you know, Kirby's DNA is, you know, influenced in such a way in there, you know, even like within Smash and stuff like that. So if you're a fan of those things, do check it out. You can go to soundstone.network. In the show notes below, I'll have links for all of Sean's stuff there, social media, all that jazz. Yeah, check it out. It is not just brand loyalty why you should listen to it. You know, it's just more fun video game content for your podcasting. So, or that's drives to work or hikes or runs or wherever you listen to your podcasts, put it in the rotation. Check it out. It gets my endorsement for sure.
Thanks. But yeah, it's definitely not a show just for Kirby fans, right? We cover Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory history. We talk about other games too. Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, the photographer, is part of our team. And I mean, we were on our last episode talking to her about her experiences with E3 and stuff like that. So like we go off into other video game topics too. We just use HAL Laboratory as kind of an anchor for the whole thing.
Well, are you ready to get the juices flowing and to get into some this or that's to warm some things up?
Yeah, let's get flowing.
All right. So this or that. We'll do a couple of these before we get to the icebreaker. But let's see. What shall we ask? Guns or knives?
So I have thought about this one because I know some of the questions you sometimes ask on this show. And I was thinking, I don't have that much of a, I guess, thinking about it in terms of video games, because I guess in real life, I don't like guns in real life. But in terms of video games, especially more kind of like fantasy guns or something like that, I would say if I were choosing a character who is like using knives versus using a gun, I would favor the long range character. I tend to like zoner characters in fighting games who are more long range. I tend to like gunner style characters like Elfelt from Guilty Gear or like Eustace in Granblue and stuff. So I think in terms of video games, I gravitate more toward guns.
Gotcha. And that doesn't need to be said, but yes, I agree in the real life scenario side of things. Big anti-gun. Pixels and Polygons does not endorse the NRA or any of those things, but we don't need to get into the political side of things. Yeah. I can just broadcast that and move on. Fox or Falco?
I guess I would say Fox. It kind of feels like he's the cornerstone of that series. It might be interesting to see what a Falco series just about him would look like, but I guess I would go with Fox just because he is the main character and he's the core driving force of all of that. Mm-hmm. I tend to play as him more, I guess, in Smash Brothers 2 between him or Falco, but both are fun. I like both, but I guess I'll go with Fox.
Okay. Warrior or Mage?
I guess I would go with Mage. Maybe kind of for a similar reason as with the gun example. I do tend to like more long range characters. I feel like just what mages can do in terms of the, I don't know, a more kind of an abstract sense of abilities, right? As opposed to just like hitting someone with like a sword or hammer or something. I guess I don't play a lot of games that have defined classes in that way. But when I do, I favor magic users.
Gotcha. And we'll call this one the last one. And I think I know your answer, but let's hear it anyway. Mario Tennis or Mario Golf?
I like both of these. I will go with Mario Tennis. I did just write an article for Retro Game Zine about the Game Boy Color Mario Tennis. But I do like both, actually. And I think Mario Golf is one that I didn't play a ton of growing up. I think I remember renting it before. But then playing it with friends nowadays on the Nintendo Switch Online, I've kind of rediscovered how much fun that game is. And it's a great kind of hangout. Like, you can play it while you have a conversation with people and just catch up with each other. It's a great game for that kind of a thing. But I do like tennis a lot as a sport just anyway. It's my favorite, like, regular sport. And Mario Tennis is just such an excellent series. So I'll go with Mario Tennis for sure.
Cool. Yeah, Mario Golf, I mean, I think I'm more of a Mario Tennis person. But I like them both for sure as well. I had... I mean, I've been playing like Nintendo golf games, like the NES Open on the NES. Like, I loved that game and would play that like all the time and everything. So, you know, by the time we got around to like, you know, Game Boy Color and getting those Camelot sports titles and everything, that blew things open for me. And I don't play a lot of Switch at all. But when that new Mario Golf came out, I was definitely on board with that and, you know, played quite a bit of that and loved like that, you know, RPG light mode that was clearly influenced from you know, or it has been, you know, a part of its, you know, series essentially since then. I enjoyed kind of dipping back into that and had a lot of fun playing online for sure. But yeah, the Mario Tennis side of things, that is going to be issue 9 of Retro Game Zine. So that'll be out in September. But yeah, you already mentioned it, Sean, but you've contributed an article to that issue. So that'll be fun if you're a fan or kind of want to read more about the series and the history. There's some cool content coming your way for Mario Tennis fans.
Yeah, and thanks for that opportunity. It felt good to be writing about games again and not just podcasting about them.
Yeah, and that's like the whole plan was just to have like a side little small project in between like bigger things I was working on, and it ended up becoming a little bit more work than I thought it was going to be to get done, but then it ended up being like a lot more fun than I thought it would be going on. So I'm plotting out the 11th and 12th issue right now and getting some contributors for those confirmed. But that'll be a whole year running for this monthly zine that just all self-published and self-done, which is kind of wild.
Awesome.
I got to think about things to do for year two or some type of annual or compendium thing to combine all of year one. I don't know. I've got some ideas cooking, but we shall see. Okay, well, that is this or that. You made it through the gauntlet, Sean. The icebreaker is a little bit more of a fun one to answer. Are you ready for that?
I am ready to break some ice.
Okay. Well, we'll go a little easy on this one. Some of them can be a little, you know, challenging, I think, but this one's fun. What is your favorite form of video game currency? You know, so Mario collects his coins, Sonic has his rings, Crash has his fruit of whatever form that is. But yeah, what is your what is your favorite form of video game currency?
Huh. I'd have to think about this. Like, none of them like immediately jump out at me. I will say that I think it's interesting in games when there is more than one form of currency, when there are different areas you can go to and like what you spend in one area is different from what you're spending in another area. Mm-hmm. And there is more of this sense of like an economy that where like these different societies are actually different and function differently as opposed to just one stock currency everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I always think that's a nice touch and I don't really see that often. I guess Gil from Final Fantasy comes to mind, but it might just be because I like Final Fantasy VII. I don't know. I can't say that I have like a super strong attachment to a particular video game currency. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite video game currency? Like, does one like immediately come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think I went with Gil as well, just because of my RPG fandom and everything. So, yeah, like when I came up with this question, it wasn't necessarily like one jumped to my brain specifically at all. But, you know, there's different, you know, there's different ones for different games and scenarios and stuff. And so I was just curious to see if there was things out there that would ever catch me by surprise. But I feel like the times I've asked this question, I'm pretty sure everybody has landed on Gil for the currency of choice, which is just kind of funny.
I guess more recently I have become, I don't know, desirous of more fighter coins in Street Fighter VI, like their economy in that game. Part of it is that it does seem like a lot of things are kind of paywalled that maybe wouldn't have been paywalled in the past, like Funlock costumes and colors and stuff like that. Like there's various kinds of currencies in that game that unlock different kinds of things. But I remember they had a promotion going a while back with Chipotle where you could get like fighter coins when you got Chipotle and stuff. And that was an interesting, I think that's one of the only times I've done something in the real world to get a virtual currency back again. But that was kind of, it was kind of fun to seek out ways to get more of those from Chipotle.
That's fun. Yeah. There's been, I think Nestle Crunch, I believe, had like some Final Fantasy VII, like remake and rebirth promotional codes. I think it was Nestle Crunch. It may have been Butterfinger. It may have been both. I'm pretty sure it was. But I remember specifically buying those just to, you know, redeem some codes just to get some in-game items that you didn't use after an hour of gameplay and everything. But that used real currency to get those in-game items.
It adds a weird sense of like realness to them in a way, right? Where it's like I'm buying this physical thing, but I'm getting this virtual thing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's like really disparate things like a Street Fighter costume and a burrito. Like somehow those are part of the same purchase.
That's fun. Okay. Well, cool. Well, we did that. Let's just get into the main episode now here. This is a chance, being a new guest, listeners can kind of get a feel for who you are. I think this question is one of my favorite ones. It's definitely an evergreen question. We definitely could ask, you know, people multiple times again and again. But what is a personal favorite game or an average game you love that you feel doesn't get enough attention? I'd love to know, you know, what this game is for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking back into my childhood, which is where I feel like a lot of people go with these kinds of answers. And there's something about like looking back in games from your childhood where you're like, was that really like a good game? Was it just something I liked at the time? Has it been affected at all by the rose-colored glasses of nostalgia? But the game that I chose for this is X-Men Next Dimension, which is an X-Men fighting game. I don't know. Have you ever heard of this game?
Yeah, Next Dimension, yes. I don't know how much time I really spent with this, though. This was on... Oh, no, wait. I'm thinking Mutant Academy on the PlayStation. Next Dimension was
kind of that series.
Okay, when did this one come out? Was this a 360 era? Like Wii, PS3 360 era?
I played it on the GameCube. It also came out... Let's see, it's from 2002... it came out on the original Xbox and PlayStation 2 as well.
Okay. Oh, okay. Nope. I just as everyone loves in podcasting, I just Googled it. And so, yes, it is essentially that Mutant Academy kind of follow up on that next generation of consoles. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So they had X-Men Mutant Academy and X-Men Mutant Academy 2. I played Mutant Academy. I've never played Mutant Academy 2. And X-Men Next Dimension is a little bit like X-Men Mutant Academy 3, but it takes, if you're familiar with Mutant Academy, it's some of those same concepts and structures and stuff, but it takes it into 3D. So for anyone who's not familiar with this game, it's an X-Men fighting game. It takes place in a 3D environment, but you're still on like a 2D plane with each other. It's not like an arena fighter. So it's like, it's sort of like Tekken or Soul Calibur or something where you're still like lined up with the other person, but you get this 3D space to move around in, which was a new thing for this particular series. Mutant Academy and Mutant Academy 2 were just like flat 2D. And this is a game that I continue to go back to as an adult too, and feel like, you know, this actually is a fun game. Like, it's something I remembered really liking as a kid before I was even that into fighting games. And even going back to it as an adult, like, sure, it's something that I have nostalgia for, but I still feel like this is a better game than I think maybe history has given it credit for. It came out at a time when it was also the time of Marvel versus Capcom 2 and Soul Calibur 2 and Capcom versus SNK 2 and stuff. And so it was competing against some pretty well-established, still very popular fighting games. And compared to those games, it's kind of janky. Like, you can tell that it is not quite as polished as some of those. And yet, I feel like it doesn't get in the way of the gameplay. And there is a certain amount of depth to it that's still there. I'm still looking up the game online. I can find people labbing out really interesting combos, finding new tech in the game like 20 something years later. It's a game that has some infinites in it. It's got some touch of death combos. There are things about it that would maybe make it a little prohibitive as far as an actual competitive fighting game is concerned. But at the same time, a lot of established older fighting games had a little bit of janky stuff in them too. And that was part of the novelty of them, is finding some of these exploits. And so I feel like it's a game that, even if it is not perfect, it's just a fun superhero fighting game.
Yeah. Was there like a story mode? Obviously, like, you know, that you could, a lot of fighting games had at the time, but like, did it have like different endings for the characters and everything in it as well? I don't remember if that did. I mean, that's what I used to play, you know, that's why I would, as a single player, like fighting game fan, like with Tekken and everything on the original PlayStation and later on games, I would love to just like run through the arcade mode just to kind of unlock everybody's ending, just to kind of see, you know, what their story was. And that was like my loop for things on there. So I assume there was a single player mode, but I'm just curious if it had like any ending for the different characters.
To some degree. Yeah. So there is a main story mode. Patrick Stewart voices Professor Xavier, like reprising his role in that. And the story mode is pretty fleshed out. And then there is also like arcade mode for the individual characters, but you get sort of a splash screen with like their bio and stuff at the end if you complete it with them. But there's not really like an individual story for everyone. But there is a more set piece main story mode with cutscenes and stuff like that. That is the main story of the game. So there's like a few different single player modes. There's a survival mode. The GameCube has a team attack mode. There's a time trial mode. So there's a few different modes.
What drew you to this game? I mean, were you like a comic fan or an X-Men fan or anything? Or was this just like kind of right age and like great gift? Like, what brought you to Next Dimension yourself?
I think it is funny because I'm not that much of an X-Men fan. Like, I don't not like them. Like, I guess I think they're interesting characters. Like, I'm favorable toward them, but I'm not like a comic book person, really. As a kid, I knew who they were. You know, I knew who Spider-Man was, and I knew like Batman characters and things like that. So I would have been playing this first in like middle school. But I did like the X-Men, and I feel like superheroes just lend themselves so well to fighting games. Nowadays, I actively follow fighting games. Like, I wrote about them for a while at The Gamer, and I regularly go to like fighting game conventions and stuff like that. But at the time, there were really not a lot of fighting games that I was playing. As someone who grew up with the Nintendo consoles, like I kind of didn't play a lot of like the Street Fighters and stuff like that along the way as much. But I think that this would maybe spoke to my interest in fighting games before I played a lot of those other ones. Not that I had never played Street Fighter before or anything, but I think it also, like, I have a twin brother, and I think just having a game that worked so well in two player as something we could play against each other just really fit where we were in our lives at that time. And it's just like a, it just has a certain party mode kind of aesthetic to it. Like, it's, you can take it seriously if you want to, but there is a certain amount of jank to it. There's things where the camera gets kind of funny. There are awkward things where you might punch a character into the corner and the game doesn't quite know what to do with it, so somehow they kind of end up sliding behind you or something, right? It's got these little buggy things here and there where you can kind of tell, like, okay, this isn't the first draft of this game, but maybe it could have used, like, a couple more weeks of playtesting just to iron out those last few bugs that they never quite got to. So it has a little bit of that going for it that I think actually gives it a bit of charm at the same time. But the characters are just so well realized. Their powers are fun to use. Everyone is really different. And I think the mechanics are pretty inspired for this game, too, where you have three different super meters and you can transfer your energy. I guess you'll remember this from Mutant Academy, because I think it had the same system, where you can fill up the different meters that apply to your different supers. But then you can also transfer the energy from one meter to another. So rather than just filling them up in a row and getting like your level one, then your level two, and then your level three, like if you have like your level one and level two built up, you could transfer those both into your level three meter and then do that one instead. So there's also like a kind of creative meter management going on. The combo system in this game is very interesting, because this is a perfect game for kind of grinding away at and figuring out what it's going to let you do. Because it doesn't have quite as many guardrails on it as some contemporary fighting games might. And while that maybe that makes it just a little less polished in certain ways, it also opens the doors to just a lot of really creative, wacky stuff, where you end up being able to link things sometimes you don't think you're going to be able to link, or you can find... a lot of the more creative tech I've seen online was done with the PS2 version, and I know that the versions are different. So I think like some of the combos in the PS2 version don't work in the GameCube version. I've tried landing certain infinites and stuff, and it doesn't seem like they quite work as well. Or I might just not be pulling them off as well. But I do know that the combos do work differently across the different versions. But it's just kind of neat to see something that maybe is kind of unassuming in some ways. Maybe wasn't a breakout thing the way, like, you know, Capcom versus SNK would have been, or, you know, Marvel versus Capcom or something, or even Soul Calibur 2, like things that it was competing against that are such really, really excellent games that have stood the test of time. This one kind of exists in those games' shadow, but despite a bit of the jank, like, it's just fun to play as these superheroes. They're very well realized. Their voice lines get kind of corny to hear them over and over again, but they're also, that's kind of charming too, to hear the same lines over and over again. It's just a game that got really baked into my memory in middle school, and going back to it is still a fun time as an adult.
Yeah, I'm a really big comic fan. I've got I used to run and manage a comic shop in Southern California for years, and I just have I have a giant custom built bookshelf in our living room. It's got, you know, 400 different hardcover comics, you know, collected editions and stuff like that on there, and I do love the X-Men. Do you have a favorite character in this game? Like, who was your character you'd like to use the most?
So as a kid, I liked Nightcrawler the most. He's still my favorite superhero. I do like his teleportation. In this game, he gets a sword. So he's got these sort of like fencing, like rapier kind of moves. He's got this really neat kind of slide that goes almost all the way across the stage. So there's a lot of cool stuff you can do with his teleporting and his sword and everything. So I still really like Nightcrawler. Nowadays, I guess alluding back to what we talked about with the guns and stuff, like nowadays I do tend to like more kind of zoning characters as well. So I quite like Bishop in this game. He's not as good, I don't think, as some of the other characters are, but I think his moves are quite fun. Mystique is a lot of fun in this game. She's got a gun too that can do very... There's a lot of very creative ways in which they take a few different characters whose main thing is just having a gun and make them play very differently. But with someone like Bishop, the way that the combo system is rather creatively permissive in certain ways, you can do something where, like, he has this advancing fire move where he jumps forward and does a flip in the air while shooting his gun off twice. And he has a throw where he can throw someone in the air behind him. And if you link it the right way, like you can grab someone, launch them in the air behind you. If you time it right, you can do the jumping, advancing fire move, hit him twice out of the air with your gun, and then you can link a second one in it too if your timing is right. So now he's juggling people in the air with his gun, and there's just a lot of creative things like that that they do with the more gunslinger style characters, where you can really juggle people a lot with projectiles. I'm not sure if it exists in the GameCube version, but I have seen things where you can play as Magneto and juggle someone with like five different beams in the air in a row and find a way to link them. So there's a lot of cool zoners in this game. So I'd say Nightcrawler, but also I like playing around with the various zoners.
The Mutant Academy games, just like this, were at least the main original version of it. I guess it was ported by, I'm reading, Exact Entertainment did the GameCube port, but Paradox was the name of the developer who did the Mutant Academy games as well. And right before the Mutant Academy games, they did Wu-Tang Shaolin Style, which was a four-player 3D fighter on the PlayStation, which only came into existence because they had a previous four-player fighting game canceled by EA called Thrill Kill, which I was like, as a small child, like desperately looking forward to, but it was going to be this M-rated, like super violent 3D four-player fighter, like a poor man's Power Stone before Power Stone even happened. But it ultimately was canceled, but they used that same game engine for Wu-Tang, and then they repurposed that engine again for the Mutant Academy games. So it has this weird tie. I like the history of Paradox and how they kind of went from that splintered, you know, game into, you know, these other licensed opportunities and moving in with other companies and publishers. And I do enjoy a good X-Men and comic book license game as well. When they dig into those details that fans really love and appreciate. Looking at the roster for this, like there are some fun deep cuts, like having Bishop in it or Forge, Havoc, you know, like those are some cool, you know, non-traditional, but still deeply rad X-Men characters. I think that's kind of cool to see. I'm gonna have to dig this one back out again, I think, and give it a shot. I must have played it at least for a little bit, but it's not immediately jumping to memory like that original Mutant Academy was. But I must have been just hooked on something else at the time. But this is a cool choice. I love the X-Men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as someone like I had watched like the X-Men animated series. There was an X-Men cartoon maker that my brother and I had played a lot when we were like particularly younger and stuff. So I was definitely familiar with a lot of the core X-Men and stuff. But it was neat to be able to play as these characters I had never heard of before. I didn't know who Bastion was, for example, but now he's one of the characters I think I enjoy playing as the most, too. I would also list him among one of the mains that I have. And like characters like Forge and stuff, like I'd never heard of him before. So it was neat to see such a varied roster. Also varied, if you look at the reception that the game got, I always think it's interesting when a game has such a wide range in how it was received critically. On the Wikipedia page, they have a breakdown of the review scores, and you have scores ranging from like Eurogamer giving it a 3 out of 10, and then Game Informer giving it a 7.75 out of 10. So it's a very polarizing game in that regard. And I think a lot of that does come from the jankiness of it and just certain things about it that feel just like a tad off sometimes. And yet you can tell that the people making the game know what they're doing. And then seeing those aspects of a game together at once is something that I don't think comes along that often, that something is kind of janky, but then also really works at the same time. And so, I don't know, I think that's why I would consider this an average game, maybe, rather than like a must-have game. You must run out and play X-Men Next Dimension on the GameCube. I don't feel that way. But as a party game, as something just to play with other people, it's a really good time.
Well, I mean, that's why we asked the question, you know, like this isn't that, you know, 10 out of 10, you know, like all time classic. This is, you know, what's the game that, you know, you enjoyed that maybe gets as underappreciated or overlooked or, you know, kind of just forgotten to time because of its averageness. But even a solid average game could be just as impactful and inspiring as, you know, a blockbuster game. So, cool. That is, we did the thing. We answered the question and we accomplished our task here for this episode. Sean, did you want to plug anything or share anything before we wrap the episode up?
Nothing beyond what we would have already talked about. I hope people can check out our podcast network and all the shows that are contained within that. We'll continue to develop it and hopefully keep bringing new things to you. So I hope people give that a look.
Yeah, I will have the links there in the show notes again, like I mentioned, and I'll put on your the Kirby Conversations and your Blue Sky link in there as well. So people can find you and follow as well. But thank you, Sean, for jumping on the show. I think brand synergy complete. The Soundstone is glowing from afar and we can feel its power resonating within us. Thanks for joining me.
I do want to give, I don't know this person, but if people are interested in learning more about X-Men Next Dimension and some of the depth that it might kind of, the deceptive perhaps amount of depth that it has for seeming like it's just kind of a arcadey superhero fighting game. Sandalwood Grips is a YouTube channel where someone has gotten really dedicated to finding unique combos, infinites, all sorts of tech in this game. So if people are curious about this game, I would check out Sandalwood Grips. He does a good job of really digging into it.
Okay. I will, a last minute plug there. I will throw that in the show notes as well. I'll find their channel and let people discover that and share that. But cool. Thank you, Sean. That's going to do it for us. You're definitely going to be on the show in the future, not because we're going to immediately record an episode after this is done.
No, of course not.
But because it's just fun chatting with you. But everyone, thanks for listening, and y'all have a great rest of your morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever it is you're listening to this. Bye.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.